Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 welcome to the cold hard truth on sports. I apologize in advance if I am out of line here.
Brace yourselves, boys. We're going in.
Am I hallucinating here? Just what in the hell do you think you're doing?
I'm not reading, I'm just looking at the pictures. Welcome to the Cold Hard Truth on Sports.
And I'm your host, Matthew Long. And I'm really excited for this week. We're going to get to talk about a topic that has been pretty taboo in the world of sports for quite some time. A topic that still people want to kind of try to avoid. And I think we need to get this out in the open. No, it's not homosexuality. I know people were like, oh God, he's going to talk about gays in football again. He's going to bring up Michael Sam, and we'll go off in another 15-minute segment on Michael Sam. No, I'm not going to go off on Michael Sam again, or gays in football, or homosexuals in professional sports or anything of that nature. I'm going to talk about mental health and sports and how it relates to sports. My special guest, renowned clinical psychologist, sports psychologist, Dr. John Murray, onto the show to talk about this very topic. How are you doing tonight, doctor?
Hey, Matthew. Thanks for having me on. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful.
Great topic tonight. Looking forward to it.
You know, it's one of those things. We've seen it kind of pop up its head here. I mean, Ron Artest a couple years ago, you know, he had a famous speech where he thanked his therapist for life, for renowned life. We've seen players like Travis Young have breakdowns. I don't know specifically, he wasn't taking medication, but he has more of a borderline or bipolar disorder. Again, diagnosis could change from psychologist to psychologist, but we've seen some of the issues that he went through last season, the breakdown, breaking into the police impound, trying to steal his car back, get into fights, and now, you know, Pouncey, talking about from the Dolphins center, talking about since the NFL and the NFLPA has been talked this off season in their winter meetings about psych evaluations for players and how it would be a positive thing. He was asked that, did he take one? He felt he didn't need one. But can you kind of shed some more light on what some of that stigma is that you see in a lot of athletes, and why do you think it's there?
Oh, this is really the heart of the issue. I've been doing this work independently. You know, I have a practice in Palm Beach. I talk to people in person on the phone. I travel to client sites and so forth. Work with teams and players, and so I see a lot of individuals that come to me, like in golf and tennis, and some, you know, from the major sports, baseball and football and basketball and hockey, that will seek me out and do one-on-one work. But when we're talking about the team structure, when we're talking about the culture, we're living in the dark ages, and there's a lot of stigma associated somehow with mental issues. I've worked really hard to try to remove some of those stigmas. The point is, you're really facing issues directly if you admit to needing some help. And it doesn't have to be seen as, you know, only the extreme bipolar disorders, major depression, suicides, murders. We see that because that's what makes the headlines. But there's on any team, on any group of individuals, you're going to find various levels of proficiency mentally. And so my whole world, what I do daily is help people to build those aspects of performance, confidence, resilience, passion, focus, all those good things that help you succeed. In addition, being available for when there are more clinical issues that need to be resolved. And so why are we having this big stigma? I think it goes back to mental health being initially in psychiatric prisons with, you know, people with ball and chains on their legs. And so people tended to, you know, associate psychology with mental illness early on, but that's the furthest reason from the reason I went back to graduate school to become, you know, a success psychologist is another way to call it, is to help people that are already competing at a high level to take it to another level completely. And we need to remove these stigmas. They're absolutely absurd.
Would you think be more, instead of looking at necessarily as mental health as illness, but actually looking at it as exercise, like if you want to relate it to sports, think that maybe a sort of a way for mental stamina in a way, being able
right.
to kind of relate it to making your mind stronger that helps your body
yeah.
or helps your performance.
We do that a lot. We talk about mental toughness. We talk about becoming stronger mentally. And the analogy holds. The same way you build muscles up to get stronger physically, or you work on your agility or your flexibility or your strength or conditioning and all those things, the same thing occurs mentally. And so there is no such thing, however, as a mental steroid. So you can't come in for a weekend workshop and go and, you know, perform optimally the whole year mentally if you're doing it right. You know, pro golfers all tend to have somebody helping them one-on-one, you know, sports psychologists. So why not pro football players? Why not teams? And, you know, you can only look as far as here. We're in Florida. You know, what happened with the Dolphins last year with that fiasco? And, yes, there has been a lot of talk about the NFL Players Association making some strides. Different coaches, different managers and owners have made comments. But I'm still waiting to see the beef. I'm not yet satisfied. I think they're still living in the dark ages. We have not seen a widespread acceptance or desire to become stronger mentally. And I don't quite understand that, because it only helps the coaches, helps the teams win, but there's a lot of factors involved in that. It's pretty complex, but it's definitely the future. There's so much you can do. There's so many ways you can go to get mentally stronger if you focus on not only repairing mental health issues, but becoming, as you say, tougher mentally.
Now, you kind of said that there's no mental steroid, but now we've seen a lot of people trying to get an edge in the NFL. We see a lot of usage of Adderall and other amphetamines, you know, amphetamine substitutes, Ritalin, stuff like that, to gain a focusing edge. Do you think that's something that's being either over-diagnosed or over-prescribed, or something that maybe isn't really going to help them a lot in the long run in the NFL?
Well, I mean, you're seeing Adderall being used by kids now in college, generally. I don't know if you know, that seems to be a trend for kids these days, is to take that. So,
yeah.
You know, for years, you know, football players have, you know, taken tons of caffeine and finding, you know, any way you can get an edge at that level anywhere in pro sports, as long as you can do it without getting caught or without getting in trouble, they're going to seek that out. What they do, I'm not going to be able to stop or control. I can make my comments about it, but I'm just trying to say to people, you know what? Yeah, you might have a pill. You might get fired up, but my goodness, there's so much further you can go in terms of, you know, putting it all together mentally. I mean, most of these team athletes haven't even scratched the surface. They haven't even come close to being confident or truly completely absorbed in the moment and focused on every play. And when I wrote my book, The Mental Performance Index, about the Super Bowl, actually, I looked at every single play in Super Bowl history, and I rated that play according to how they performed in the moment, not according to whether they scored. In other words, it was a qualitative look at performance. And you know what I found? I found that actually correlates. It's associated with winning more than anything else. So there's evidence to back this up. It's not just talk. Although that's another whole thing, is the whole idea of talk. Is somehow there's been this stigma in the military and in sports, especially tough guy sports, that tough guys don't talk. Well, that's further from the truth than anything. The more you face your problems, the tougher you really are. So if you can come forth and admit you got some needs and put it on the table and deal with it and get better and get stronger, everybody prospers. I don't see why the reluctance.
Yeah, my grandfather, it kind of, point that he'd always tell me when I was younger, if you don't ask, no one's going to tell you. If you don't get help, you're never going to figure it out. You know,
yeah.
No shame
somehow, yes,
in making sure you get it right.
You know, I think it comes from that culture of just shut up and do it, you know, shut up and listen to the coach. And you have to have that to a certain extent. And certainly when I go into a team situation, the coach is the boss. I'm not going to try to usurp the authority of the coach. I'm a provider of success psychology services as well as clinical services when needed. And my goal is to help the entire organization win, to be honest. But you don't win by focusing on winning. You win by focusing on the day-to-day grind, what you do in the moment. And those skills have to be built over time. You can't just, you know, like the steroid analogy holds, because you can't just give a pep talk. But that's often what they'll do. They'll bring in a celebrity speaker. He gives a little talk, or she gives a little talk, and they expect that to work for the entire season. Forget it. It's not going to do it. I've seen it too much in my practice. You got to do it day by day.
And now, how much, when you see this mental exercise, it'll translate to the field. How much does this improve the family dynamic, or does it?
Well, that's another issue. I mean, certainly there's off-field issues that can, I would think, have tremendous amounts of improvement if somebody's talking rather than hitting, or somebody's talking rather than abusing substances, or, you know, or abusing their family or whatever. If there's something serious going on, you know, the first thing you need to do is encourage that person to talk about it, and that's in confidentiality too. You know, you don't go talking about your clients when you're a sports psychologist. You keep those sensitive issues in that room. But by resolving it verbally, I mean, that's the oldest principle of counseling, you know, from the very beginning, is the idea that if you talk about it, somehow it helps resolve some kind of a pent-up frustration or need, or, you know, there's all kinds of theories on that, but it certainly does help.
Yeah, it's amazing how sometimes you give something air and how it breathing a little bit can help out the situation.
Yeah, I was with a basketball team, Division I, and with the coach who had played with Jordan and Patrick Ewing, a really nice guy, tough guy though, real tough coach down here in Florida, brought me in for a couple of years and let me do the evaluations on all the players at the beginning of the season. And, you know, he told me after the end of the first season that, you know, you helped that guy not kill himself, because we sniffed out one guy that really didn't want to be playing basketball, wanted to go home, and had we not gotten in there, he might have committed suicide. So that's an example, you know, of being in touch with what's going on. It's not weak to know what's going on. Knowledge is power. You know, knowledge is strength and force. And all the great coaches throughout the years a lot of the great coaches are psychologists in their own right, but they don't have time these days to devote the energy and time necessary in today's game. So every team really does need somebody on board really helping them.
Now, big thing in the news since the NFL draft is the acceptance, and I guess over the last couple of years, acceptances of homosexual teammates in professional sports. Do you see any sort of a psychological repercussion to this, or have you ran into any clients that maybe have an issue with a team member being gay? Or openly gay? Have you
I mean, it's already been
that?
Expressed. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead. Continue that.
Oh, that was a thought.
Well, I mean, like any change is going to be traumatic. I mean, when Jackie Robinson came into the league, you know, for the first time, that people revolted. When women got the right to vote. I mean, when, you know, everything changes. We're evolving constantly. Now, you're getting into a really sensitive issue. There's going to be a lot of players that aren't going to like that. They're going to be repulsed by it, but too damn bad. I mean, if a person has individual predilections, I'm not going to be the moral judgment of that person. I'm going to help that person beat the hell out of their opponent on Sunday. That's my goal, is to help the team win. I'm not worried about what they do in their personal life. That's my personal view on that. But, you know, some things we don't understand, but we have to realize we live in a diverse society. And so I'm not going to go judging people by, you know, what color shirt they wear, or who they hang out with in their free time.
So what would you say to some of the players that maybe have some issue with coping? What could some people, I mean, a lot of, you know, I've former and current athletes that listen to this show, people in general, just in their work life, maybe they have, I don't want to say it's homophobia, because there can be a certain sense of ignorance or misunderstanding about a situation you're not comfortable in. What do you think that people could use as a healthy coping mechanism to deal with a situation like that?
Well, I mean, the first time somebody that's gay comes out and, you know, helps a team win a major championship, that issue is going to go away. I really believe that. It's all about the team. And, you know, congrats to the St. Louis, was it the Rams that picked up Michael Sam? So, I mean, there's all kinds of examples of that throughout history when, you know, how do you do something different, you know, for the first time? And how does that, whether that's accepted or not, it doesn't matter. If it's there, it's there. Now, the main thing is going to come down to not going to be what the person does in their free time. It's going to be, or who they like or whatever. It's going to be whether they can contribute to the success of the entire organization. So it's almost like it's almost like, why are you worrying about that when you have your own job to do and you have to perform at the highest possible level? You know, why are you worrying about what somebody's, you know, doing or what their orientation is? That's something that's less important than the team. Yeah.
So essentially stick to A. If A is successful, B and C fall in place.
Yeah. And I think understanding, you know, comes from exposure to different ideas and different, you know, I'm sure that, you know, somebody that comes into the league is going to be successful at some point, and they're going to develop a bond with those other players, and they're going to realize at that point that it's really not, and there could be some people that were previously very, very discriminatory, and they're going to realize, wait a minute, what was I doing? It's going to be like, you know, kind of like the black-white thing. You know, for years, there were colored water fountains. Are you kidding me? I mean, ridiculous. So, you know, you don't have to always like it, but society will keep moving forward slowly but surely.
Now, there's a lot of players out there that don't have the benefit of either the team don't have the finances, either through college or high school, that what those resources of someone like you. Now, what would you recommend to two players out there, either younger athletes or maybe professional athletes that are listening right now that think it is taboo? What would your recommendation be to them for any of their issues, or what would you recommend to them moving forward, how to better themselves?
Well, I mean, I don't think somebody who's got an issue with somebody else is going to go in and seek treatment. Let's put it that way. As far as changing perceptions or gaining acceptance or, you know, moving forward, however you want to describe it, that I think is going to be the primary responsibility of the person in charge, whoever it is, whether it's the AD at the university or the coach. And it's up to them to get good speakers to come in or to provide good informational material, have orientation meetings where they talk about issues and so forth. And I think the more that it can be brought to the forefront and not swept under the rug, I think that's a problem with anything if you think about it. When you ignore something, when you put it aside, when you say that psychological skills don't matter or they're not as important as some, you know, that's when you get in trouble, when you try to hide something. So the more it comes forward, the more I think the more exposure people have to it. You know, they may not agree with it. You know, I don't understand how some people act, but that doesn't mean I have to, you know, criticize them for their way of being. So just getting more open. I think our whole culture has evolved from, you know, the insanity what was happening in Germany in the 1940s to, you know, we're a lot more open today than we've ever been.
I have a clinical psychologist, Dr. John Murray, with me. Now, do you think at any point in time that we're eventually going to get to the point to where we look as psychologists, maybe a personal trainer, almost in that light, where just you have a strength trainer, just like you have a, you know, condition trainer? Do you think we're going to be able to get to that point in time here?
Well, we're already to that point in golf and a lot of times in tennis, some of the individual sports. My biggest clientele happens to be, you know, parents who bring their adolescent kids in because they want to have them achieve and get to a college and or make the high school team or whatever. So it's already there. I mean, there's not too many people like me doing this work. It's a big hurdle because the educational requirements are audacious. I mean, it's ridiculous what you have to go through, the hoops you have to go through to become a legitimate sports psychologist. And, you know, it's really, really a hard climb. So there's not that many of us out there, but it's already, you know, when will it become part of every medical center, every team around the globe? I mean, that's going to be a long way off because there's too many requirements to get there. But there could be some streamlining in education that takes place, but overall I think we're still in the dark ages, because even though there are only a handful of really legitimate ones out there, we're still not having phones ring off the hook. I mean, why is my phone not ringing off the hook right now from all four major sports? Think about that. I mean, I know there's only a few people like myself out there. So what is going on? Obviously, they're not being used.
It's the education factor. We're not educating. I don't think that they're educated enough on the benefits of having a mental health professional there, having a psychologist.
And Matthew, that's why I wrote the book. That's why I wrote the book, The Mental Performance Index. I wanted to quantify mental performance and then show how it correlates with winning, and I think I did that. The only problem is I have a small publisher. The book hasn't gotten around the way I'd like it to, but anybody that's read it.
We need to get you on Oprah, man.
I'm sorry.
Get you on Ellen and Oprah.
There you go. Get me on there. No, but Tom Flores wrote the foreword. Tom, of course, and then the two-time Super Bowl winning coach of the Raiders. Don Shula gave me a quote for the cover through a friend of mine, Jim Jensen, who plays for the Dolphins. I also got, Leslie Visser wrote the epilogue, the famous sportscaster. So there's a lot of people, when they read it, they love the book. But my goodness, you're right. Where's Oprah when you need her?
She's giving away cars and trying to buy the clothes.
Hey, at least I have Matthew Long in my corner. That's what I'm
here. Right. I'm 100% here for you.
There you go. Thanks, Matt.
One thing that's
appreciate
really helped me is the my wife is about to graduate as a clinical psychologist in forensic psychology here in June. She graduates
cool.
the 20th. So that's one thing that's really helped me learn a lot more mm-hmm. about it, and has erased some of the misunderstandings or I've came across as far as psychology.
Yeah.
I know not everybody has my wife there or someone like my wife in their life. And I think that's something we need to improve, that education. You'll see every now and then CNN or ESPN do some sort of small special on it, and it gets people thinking, oh, that's cool. And then it's gone. It's gone.
Yeah.
It's like it's a flash in the pan. But that's what the problem is. I think it's something that we need to find a way to get it to be, to get it repeatedly out there. To get it to be
no doubt about
a household
it.
Understanding, just like a Band-Aid,
for
the capital.
No doubt about it. And there are better people than Dr. Phil. As good as Dr. Phil might have seen on television, as good as Dr. Laura, who wasn't even a psychologist, there are good professionals out there that can do a lot of good things. And even if you're not a sports psychologist, you can help an NBA team with their mental health issues if you're working in the clinical area. Congrats to your wife. The truth is psychology – is just the study of behavior, mental processes, the mind, human behavior, so forth. It doesn't have to be associated with mental illness. That's just one area. And it's certainly not why I got into the field. I was an athlete and a coach, and I was coaching tennis worldwide, came back to school and went the whole route, at the University of Florida. And, that's why I went in. I wanted to help people like I'm doing today, to develop skills for winning and success. And so people need to realize that. It's not a negative thing. It's not a mental illness thing. It's really about just being the best you can possibly be every moment.
Absolutely. And for to find out more information, and they can get your book on your website, John F.
Well, the book's a little hard to get right now, but you can email me and I'll find a way to get you one. I took back the copyright myself personally from the publisher that was very small, and I'm going to probably find another publisher for it. But the website is johnfmurray.com. That's J-O-H-N-F as in Frank, M-U-R-R-A-Y.com. And you can find out all the information. You can contact me and, start a dialogue, whatever you need.
And also you can follow him on Twitter at Dr. John F. Murray. So be sure to follow him on social media, keep him doing what's going on. It was wonderful having on you. I'm sure that I'll have you back on here in the future. I'm sure we'll talk sometime here in the meantime, too, because this is a cause that is very, very important to me. It's something that people very much need to pay attention to and understand the importance behind it and why the stigma is nonsense,
Even if it's just greed. I mean, you're going to win more with it. That's the bottom line. I mean, think about it. You're going to win more. Hello.
Exactly. And that positive, and you hit on it earlier, that positive mental focus, being able to understand how to get the most out of yourself, you don't need the pill. You don't need to take the Adderall because, like you're talking about with your index, there's ways to understand how your body works. The more you understand that and you can work through that, you can accomplish more than a quick fix from Adderall or caffeine.
Yeah, we look in the wrong places sometimes. Thanks for having me on, Matt. It was a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Dr. John Murray, ladies and gentlemen.